These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
You got to look at each individual possession of why do we get stopped. And it's a combination of things. It's never any one thing. So there will be a lot to correct. And that's what, you know, tomorrow and early this week will be all about.
Dude, why is everyone so solemn? They won. They came from behind with 37 seconds left. Greg Joseph with a clutch game-winning field goal. Everyone's all focused on how ugly it was. Sometimes you got to win ugly in the National Football League, all right?
Yeah.
Why don't you turn that frown upside down, Kirk Cousins, Vikings fans, Judd?
You're going to have to go back and watch every single play from the last 24 years to know as much as I know. When you do that, get back to me, and then we can talk.
I love the NFL sort of cop out, and coaches and Cousins uses it. So what went wrong? Well, we got to go back and look at the film, right?
Yeah.
And then when they go back and look at the film, and you ask them again later, like, well, so what went wrong? Well, we're really just focused on the next opponent.
Well, yeah, that's so true. Yeah, I mean, the Carolina Panthers are all we're thinking about right now.
We just got to be.
Can't tell you.
Yeah,
about
we've flushed that previous game.
You're right.
We're on to the next here. All right, it's Mackie and Judd, daily Minnesota sports entertainment. And every Tuesday, we hold people accountable. We go through who gets it and who doesn't. We'll get to random season recall on the show. Perhaps some overreactions from me on three Wolves preseason games.
Mm-hmm.
I'm already planning parade routes. Actually, I don't know about you guys. Hennepin's all kind of broken up all the time. We're gonna need a new route.
Oh, no one's going near there, man. You cannot drive down it.
So we'll figure something out, but let's start. Let's start with someone who doesn't get it.
Yeah.
And I hate to do this because I feel like he has good intentions. I feel like he's caught in a spin cycle of old school mentorship. But I got to do it to you. Clinton Alexander Kubiak doesn't get it. The Vikings offensive coordinator.
Is that his real middle name or did you just make it up?
What do you guys think?
I bet.
Do you think his real middle name is Alexander?
Yes.
It's oddly specific. And it doesn't sound like you're trying to be funny.
It's pretty common middle name.
No, but I mean, you ordinarily go with like something that's much more generic than.
Well, you know, it doesn't. You know, his middle name doesn't start with a K because that would be weird. So you can rule one letter out.
The Lions had a player once named Harry Colon. Like weirdness doesn't. Parents don't always think about it, man.
Let's name him Harold. Harold Cologne.
Harry Colon. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to say yes, that's his real middle name.
It is. Alexander is his middle name.
You looked it up. Okay.
I believe it's not Clinton, though. It's just Clint. Clint Alexander Kubiak. And the offense that he leads has so much potential. You know, Kirk Cousins, clean pocket, play action. He's really good. Justin Jefferson's one of the five best receivers in the NFL. Thielen still has some gas in the tank. KJ Osborne. I mean, you got two starting caliber running backs on your roster. And yet, the Vikings rank 28th in the NFL in second half scoring. They are averaging at home this season 5 points per game in the second half, or 5 points per second half. They do nothing in the second half. They've barely scored any touchdowns in the second half. Is it like two or three second half touchdowns all season?
Yeah, they haven't scored
for this team.
Last two games, they have not scored a touchdown. And I think in the last three games, the only touchdown they've scored was a defensive one when they returned the pick against Kyler Murray, right?
So, yeah, I mean, they had two second-half touchdowns in the first week of the season against the Bengals, if I'm not mistaken. But 28th in second-half scoring. So it's conservative.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, it's also the time of the game where you don't get the benefit of scripted plays. You could script the first quarter pretty much.
Yep.
Okay, once you get away from that, how is your offense performing when it's more improvisational? You got to call plays on the fly. Also worth noting, the Vikings are second in terms of running the football on second and long. And by second, I mean they have the second most runs on second and long. So everything is just conservative. Let's just gain a couple yards. Get it to third and nine. Like, dude, take the freaking training wheels off this thing. And by the way, you're going to be forced to. Maybe not as much against Carolina, although you're going on the road. You're going to have to score some points on the road to win that game. But you want to beat Dallas? You want to beat Baltimore? The Chargers? The Packers? The four games out of the bye? dude, you gotta open this thing up a little bit. So Clint Kubiak, sorry, buddy, you don't get it.
Is this the perfect storm in some ways as well of in a bad way? What can go wrong with a Zimmer guided, not led, guided offense in this sense? When you've got Norv Turner, they might fight, but Norv's got ideas. Like, Norv is not going to say, okay, Mike, that's just fine. You're the boss. Oh, my God. He's going to say, well, we're going to incorporate some of what I want to do here, or I quit, which he did, we think. Pat Shurmur, same sort of way, did a brilliant job, but clearly knew his stuff. And I think he knew probably and had enough time in the league to tell Mike to sort of stand down and be like, yeah, Mike, what you want to do here is fine, but I've got to incorporate. Stefanski had Gary Sr., who clearly met with Mike a lot, and I'm sure at times said, "You're full of crap, Mike. Here's what we
now." But Gary was conservative by nature as Gary well. Was Gary loved to run the football,
but yes. But my point is now we've gone to a guy who's conservative by nature potentially, and is not going to give Mike any lip back. He's going to basically be like, okay, Mike, we'll do what you say. So I wonder if this is the perfect storm in a very bad way of what happens when Mike is just really dictating things. And I don't think that there's a guy offensively on the staff to say, hold on a second here. Like, it would have to be Kirk, I think. Don't
Mike and Mike, we already knew about, you know, well, yeah, to your Kirk point, you know, the guy's been in the NFL for a decade. He's been a starting quarterback for 7 years. And yes, he definitely has flaws. And, you know, the fact that his teammates and coaches are talking about him like being a better leader this season. Like, why is that even were people talking about Matt Ryan at age 33? Like, he's a good leader now. No, he's been a good leader for 10 years. So that's a little weird on the Kirk front. But like, why wouldn't Kirk have more say or more? And maybe that's been some of the tug of war. But Mike Zimmer, with his quote after that game, when Courtney Cronin asked him, we played it on yesterday's show, why did you guys run the clock down with 2 timeouts and 40 seconds left in the first half? Like, why? That's plenty of time to matriculate your way into field goal range, or maybe even more. Throw the ball to Justin Jefferson, right? And his answer was, well, you know, we've made some mistakes in previous situations like that, and so, you know, we were going to kind of feel it out. We were going to run the ball. And if we got a big gain on first down, if we got a first down type gain on first down running the ball, like, how many 10-plus yard carries are you really going to have, you know,
right,
from, especially from your own side of the field like that? And if we got a first down, then we would have proceeded. Okay, so you're telling me that your strategy there is to pray to God that you get like a 9-yard gain on first down. Then you're going to have to burn a timeout. Because, you know, it's a run play and you got tackled in the middle of the field. Why not throw an out route that gets you 12 yards out of bounds? Preserve the timeout. Like, how risky is it? Is it riskier to give the ball to Alex Mattison or throw the ball to Adam Thielen? Like, Kirk Cousins has a low interception rate. Alex Mattison fumbles all the time. Like, he fumbled against Seattle last year. He fumbled last week. Yeah. So, like, Mike doesn't have – if Mike had a better 30,000-foot view of, all right, let's be aggressive on offense – and let's throttle down with 40 seconds left and 2 timeouts. How you guys get there, you figured out. But he pulls the reins back from 30,000 feet, and it makes things worse.
Mike doesn't care about – he doesn't care or understand or give thought to his personnel. He only cares about one thing, his philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, he doesn't think about Justin Jefferson, Thielen, KJ Osborne, Kirk can throw.
Yeah, let's open it up a little bit. Yeah.
He thinks – he could have me carrying the rock and would think I'm going to give it to Judd because that's safer.
3 yards and a cloud of dust.
I wouldn't get 3 yards. I'd die. But the fact is, he doesn't give thought to and that goes big picture back to why having a defensive guy that doesn't really understand or give a lot of thought to offense is really contrary to how this league runs now. Because don't you want your coach to be like firing away, thinking up, okay, we got this play, we got that play, we got this play. It gets to be a difficult thing because you're literally dealing with a guy who is afraid of screwing up. And I will always contend this. I'm sorry, but I do not. I think if you're an expert on one side of the ball, you have 1,000 blind spots on the other side of the ball, unless you're a really well-rounded coach, and there aren't a ton of those. And so, you know, Mike is, it's not like Mike really gets it. Mike's thinking, how's the defense going to stop us? Not how can my offense best attack their defense? Mm-hmm.
All right, not to dump on the whole Clint Kubiak even more parade here of who doesn't get it.
No, this is therapeutic.
Let's just keep doing it.
Monday and Tuesday is all about therapy. Wednesday, new. It's a look ahead. Ahead Wednesday.
We're not talking about the Detroit game starting tomorrow. Is that what you're saying?
No, we're on to Carolina.
On to Carolina.
Okay. Who doesn't get it is Clint Kubiak for not stretching the field. The Vikings, going into Monday Night Football at least, ranked 31st in the NFL on passes 20-plus yards attempted. So for whatever reason, they don't like stretching the field. But on Sunday, when Kirk did put the ball in the air through 10-plus yards, he found Justin Jefferson a ton. And Justin Jefferson put up a big day when he targeted him 6-for-6 for 115 yards. So he was able to get Justin Jefferson going by stretching the field. For whatever reason, when the Vikings really want to shove it down and really want to take more pass attempts, they don't want to do that. And I think it really limits the Vikings' offense. And even though the running attack is what it is, and Alexander Mattison still technically has a big day in the passing game and in the running game yesterday against the Lions, this offense is too talented with Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen to not be taking more shots down the field. And it's frustrating. Yeah. So Clint Kubiak, Vikings offense, stretch the field, dude.
I found it on Pro Football Focus here too. So Kirk Cousins, and I'm going to use Kirk because he's the quarterback in the rankings here, but this is a schematic. This is partially scheme. It's partially Zimmer, conservative guiding hand, and it's partially Kirk tends to avoid risky throws more than some other quarterbacks. Like he fears interceptions a little bit too much. But the Vikings have attempted 15 passes of 20 yards or more in the air. So basically three per game. The Raiders have attempted 35. Tom Brady has attempted 32. Josh Allen, 27. Lamar Jackson, 27. Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah.
25 has attempted 10 more than the Vikings so far this season.
Yep.
And it's like, you know, but it's risky. Okay, you might throw an extra pick, but you might get an extra touchdown as well.
But here's the thing I don't get, okay? So I did get the Football Viking defender heads tweeting back at me Monday about, well, the Lions were playing two deep safeties and you got to take what the Lions give you. And my response was, one, it's the Lions. Two, a ton of teams now play that. So it's not like, you know, Detroit is the only team on Sunday playing two deep. And I'm willing to bet that a lot of teams that saw two deep still went deep at times. And the third thing is this. Okay, so let's say for the sake of this conversation, Justin Jefferson is taken out. So you're like, I can't throw to him. He's doubled or something. KJ Osborne, Thielen, you can't take everybody away. You can't say two deep takes every receiving option away. That makes no sense. Of course it doesn't. So those factors are what drive you crazy. And I like the fact that Jefferson led the team in receptions on Sunday, but for Adam Thielen to officially catch two passes on the last drive and that's it, come on. That makes no sense. And you know, KJ Osborne deserves chances too. And I guarantee you that there were shots there of some sort to take to him that weren't at least attempted. Guaranteed.
Another excuse for why don't the Vikings take more shots down the field and be more aggressive is, well, their offensive line can't hold up that long. How are you supposed to throw the ball down the field if, you know, you hit your third step on a drop back and there's, you know, all four defensive linemen are in your face, right? I mean, every snap, he's just, oh, my God, what do I do? All these guys are getting forklifted off the line. Well, the Vikings don't have an amazing offensive line. But let's deal in fact here. According to ESPN.com's team pass block win rate, the Vikings are 21st, tied with Tampa Bay and just ahead of the Raiders, who are 24th. Tampa Bay and the Raiders attempt more deep passes than any team in the NFL, with an equal or worse pass blocking unit than the Minnesota Vikings have so far this season.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not if the Raiders are going to deal with pressure and still throw the ball down the field, and the Buccaneers are going to do it, then it's a schematic and play calling issue or a Kirk moving off of Justin Jefferson because he's not wide open issue.
Right. And if I'm correct about this, I believe the PFF grades for the Vikings pressures against Detroit were absolutely fine.
Yeah, they were.
Like, the Detroit defense with what they currently have are not going to get home much. They're just not. Like, that was the game to be like, let's do some stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Yeah. But don't give me this. Well,
right, Judd, who gets it? Who doesn't?
All right. Who doesn't?
Just muttering to himself.
Well, just don't give me this. Every team sucks. Every team
sucks. Second long.
We're playing every team, and they're all different. Bleep that. It's the Lions at home.
Okay, one more quick thing on this. Like, we love to sharpen. By we, I mean, like, the royal we, right? We sharpen this pencil all the time in terms of, like, we scapegoat the offense or Kirk.
Right.
So you need to be more aggressive. You've got these weapons. You want to score more. You want to score more than 5 points on average in the second half of home games? Mm-hmm. Throw the ball down the field. Throw the ball to Jefferson, okay? And so that's sort of the... That's the mission statement. How do you score more points? Be more aggressive offensively. Take more chances like some of these other teams are. And then the excuses start coming in, right? Well, the offensive line. Well, the bracket coverage. It's, you know, two safeties over the top.
Yeah.
You know, it's, well, it's, you know, the offensive line, Kirk, this. It's like, okay, well, you know, you watch Josh Allen the other night. That dude's running for his life on half those snaps. I mean, that's a Chiefs defense. It's not that great. But, like, he flushes out to the right. Throws a bomb off one leg 40 yards down the field. Like, other teams find a way to take chances down the field. The Vikings need to as well. All right.
All right, who does not get it? The National Football League. John Gruden and this entire thing, and I will start by saying he deserved exactly what he got. He deserved to be fired. He quit, but he was about to be fired. But let's look at the big picture and realize John Gruden is a wart on the big toe of this entire league, and they burned it off last night, okay? Let's examine what is really going on behind the scenes that led up to Gruden getting in trouble. And I know it's not really sexy and it's boring, but it's the most important thing. So like, if you're doing an investigation of, well, let's look into this Gruden thing, what you are going to find is a league that basically is gaslighting you at every single turn. So the Gruden stuff came out because of exchanges that he made with a Washington football team employee. And that was the investigation, not into the Grudens, not into one employee, but into the entire culture that Daniel Snyder had with the Washington football team. That investigation, which was closed, I think, a month or two back, it surfaced 650,000 emails of evidence. 650,000! And the league declared the investigation's complete. We are going to deal with this internally. And by the way, we are not going to release anything. Fast forward to the last few days. I believe it was last week. And we find out that Gruden made what is 1,000%, I don't care what he says, a racist comment about the head of the Players Association. But more importantly, what lurked in the background was several more tweets that offended not only blacks, but it offended basically everybody you could possibly offend, including Roger Goodell. And conveniently, the league takes a private investigation. We will be announcing nothing from this. We won't show you anything. And it leaks out to very particular and very credible sources, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, just what Gruden had said, to the point of last night on the countdown show before the game on ESPN, where Schefter and the panel were going after Gruden hard without saying. They only said that there have been more emails that surfaced. They were sent by the league to the Raiders to handle the matter on their side, and they all ripped Gruden. So you knew that either late last night, which is what transpired, or today, he was gone. But the fact is, I'll repeat it again, there are 650,000 emails that show what Dan Snyder did, what I'm sure that, unfortunately, John Gruden not alone in his homophobic, racist ways. And the league is going to tell you now, go away. This is all. And I think what Patrick told us on Rap with Royce earlier is absolutely correct. Because he ripped Goodell and called him a very bad word, they decided, well, we're going to get this out there. But they're going to gaslight us now and be like, the rest of this is private. Who else is implicated? And if anybody believed for one second that Dan Snyder turned over the running of the Washington football team to his wife out of the goodness of his heart, I got some real estate to sell you.
Yeah.
He's been suspended. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, this is a really interesting story here, and that I agree. John Gruden, I think a lot of people felt like this is who he is behind the scenes for a long time, and here he is for everyone to see, right? And he just immediately resigned with, I'm sure, some urging of the Davis family and the NFL. But, yeah, I'd be curious to know. You know, he's emailing back and forth between him and the Washington's
Bruce
team
Allen.
President, right, Bruce Allen. Like,
Bruce Allen,
I kind of want to know what Bruce Allen had to say back to some of those emails.
650,000 of these, man.
Where do we stop here? This story has also brought out the – well, everyone says things that they wouldn't be proud of in their emails, guy, which I heard from a lot on Twitter last night. Why don't you release your emails? And see, I mean, you'd be very, very underwhelmed by my emails, which are mostly just like geeky Timberwolves opinions and, I don't know, like 50,000 emails every morning from websites I have somehow opted into their email list. But
that could be a long list.
If you are an NFL head coach and if you are high up in an NFL front office and you are openly misogynistic, racist, and homophobic, you deserve to be called to the carpet.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is a huge influential entity in our country, and the NFL has been trying to change its culture. I just think there's a whole treasure trove of people just like John Gruden,
right,
that could probably stand not to be canceled forever, but held accountable. All right, there's a huge difference between cancel culture and accountability culture.
Bingo.
And John Gruden is experiencing accountability culture right now.
Well, yeah, and the thing too, though, is don't now tell me that's it. It's done. It's not done. And I know that. That's the thing that drives me crazy about billionaires and sports leagues. They're going to tell you when it's done. No, you're not. And John Gruden, again, he's a boil on your butt. If you're this league, yeah. he's a wart.
I like the wart on the toe. There we go. That's better.
Well, he's going to be burned
off.
A boil
on your butt, huh?
He's a boil. He is such a small piece of this. Because here's what I want. Turn on your fellow billionaires. I'd like to know what owners have said. Like, don't just say it stops with Gruden. And by the way, the rest of the league's fine. There are no homophobic, racist, misogynistic people in this league other than Johnny Gruden. Come on.
Yeah. So, yeah, stupid. Very, very interesting quick development from some emails got out to he's just gone from the Raiders within like 72 hours. All right, who gets it, who doesn't? I'm sorry, I'm going to stay on the who doesn't get it train here.
Okay.
And this is the first time I've ever done this, but I'm going back-to-back Jim Polad. Because I don't think we could remind people enough, especially with some amazing playoff baseball going on. Two different things. Number one, the Twins have not won a playoff game since 2004. Let's stamp that on the beginning of every single Major League Baseball playoff game.
I'm so down right now because of that.
Like the intro for Twins games, when we fire these back up in spring training next year, the intro on the Bally Sports North, you know, pregame, like it should start. Yeah.
What if
Bizarro
Bramer? This team hasn't won in forever. It's inexcusable, Justin.
It doesn't need to be a rant. It can just be. And welcome into Hammond Stadium here in Fort Myers for the Twins' first spring training game of the season. And as always, a reminder, they are 0-18 in their last 18 playoff games dating back to 2004, the longest losing streak in American sports history. Justin, your thoughts on today's spring training game? Like,
you're going to chair really hard.
So, number one, every single playoff team that made it to the division round won a playoff game this year, something the Twins have been unable to do in 18 tries. And another reminder, if you're watching these teams throw haymakers at each other, late game, big outs, big home runs, clutch hits, well-constructed bullpens, great trades at the deadline. Just remember that all of those teams are chasing the Twins front office, which graded, according to Jim Polad, A-plus in 2021. Red Sox, I'm sorry, you're chasing the Twins. Giants, taking a 2-1 lead, 107 wins, you're chasing the Twins, according to Jim Polad. So I just thought it was worth mentioning again for two straight weeks. Jim Polad doesn't get it.
Woof. Sorry, Jim Polad. I saw a stat from Boog Zombie actually last night. So, and I see a lot of baseball fans jumping on this too, and it's a good point. Boog tweeted out that since the start of the 2019 playoffs, teams that out-homer their opponents are 73-11. So naturally, when the Twins out-homered the Yankees in Game 1 of the 2019 ALDS, they still are one of those 11 losses. Because they did out-homer the Yankees in Game 1 of the ALDS. They did try. They tried very hard. I'm saying there's a chance.
Another one to tally up here is I don't think the Twins, we can check this, but I'm pretty sure it's been 17 straight postseason games since they scored more than 4 runs in a game.
Mm-hmm.
So they haven't even accidentally scored like 7.
Do you know who I fall? Clint Kubiak.
Not taking shots.
Take the training wheels
run
off.
On second
call
and long.
Some plays, man. Call some plays, Clint.
All right.
All right, Declan, who gets it, who doesn't?
I'll go to who gets it. The NHL season does start today, and this is a pseudo who gets it because I have another comment, but the Seattle Kraken do play today. I'm sure Phil is jacked up for Seattle Kraken fever. They get the Vegas Golden Knights tonight. I believe it's in Vegas. I'm not sure if that one's in Seattle. Yeah. No, it's the later game, so I assume it's one of the two. But actually, who does get it is Bill Guerin. So Bill Guerin, who I've used before on who gets it, friend of the show, by the way, on Score North and on Judd's Hockey Show. He comes on with us and talks puck, but you know, Billy actually went a little viral for a clip because the Wild are launching, you know, their Becoming Wild show, which, you know, is in general kind of a little hilarious to me. It's just kind of funny stuff. But this clip of Bill Guerin talking to Captain Jared Spurgeon, and I think it just signifies the change in culture with the Minnesota Wild.
Listen, you guys know what this is all about, right? Right? What's it all about? Spurgy?
Hard work, man.
That. This is about winning.
Oh, dude.
Love it, dude.
Let me get jacked
it. It is exactly what we've been talking about. And I don't know if Spurgeon actually has a little smirk on his face, and if people couldn't hear because it was a little muffed, he says hard work and having fun. And
he said it in jest, I'm assuming, right? He was kidding.
Yeah, and he does. And he puts a little smile on his face because Bill Guerin very quickly says, bleep that. This is about bleeping winning, and this is entire culture change that Bill Guerin is talking about. It's why Parise and Suter have been bought out. It's why there's a new captain, and alternate captains into this fold. It's why the Wild are now changing the guard. I don't know if they're going to be as good as Colorado this year. Colorado might be the best team in the NHL, but this changing of the culture, the Parise, Suter, the Koivu, the Niederreiters, the Zuckers,
Hamonville,
that is officially dead. It's officially dead, and this is about winning. It's not about having fun and playing for your hometown team anymore. This is about winning. Culture shift.
Yeah,
Bill Guerin gets it.
I have a sneaky suspicion that because I watched that clip about 5 times.
I've watched it.
That there was a time that somebody said that from the old guard. Because, like, first of all, Spurgeon, it's almost like a wink-wink.
Hard work and having fun. And
yeah,
he was all
like somebody from the old guard had said that. And then he's like, because, I mean, there is no question that Bill Guerin, not too fond of what he walked into with the culture for the Wild, and I don't blame him.
Let's play that clip again. I need that. I need that right into my veins here. Come on.
Listen, you guys know what this is all about, right? Right? What's it all about? Spurgy?
Hard work and having fun.
That. This is about winning.
Ah,
Spurgeon almost knows,
dude.
Though.
Yes, he knows.
Yeah, but
who's the guy to Spurgeon's right? When Spurgeon says it, there's a guy to his right with a twin head and smiles at him like,
it might have been Eck. I'm not 100%, but it's just a golden clip, dude. It's so good.
It's outstanding.
God,
Okay, take that. Put that in Jim Polad's blood, in Derek Falvey. Derek Falvey, and Falvey's a great guy. I like Derek Falvey, but like, is he going to walk into that clubhouse with that command and be like, F this? We're winning a cup. We're winning a championship.
And the best part, Bill Guerin has 2 cups. He's been a captain.
He knows what it takes.
So like, he carries the street cred to say that. and not be, like, you've never played, you know, you're not, who are you? He's actually won. So
he's
that's
two,
the best part.
He's
I
got
love that.
Two cup grapefruits. He's that's got, what he's
yes,
got.
He does. Couple cups, two different places.
All right, Judd, put a wrap on.
All right,
who gets it? Who doesn't?
Who gets it? I'm going to go very general here. Stay in the world of football, and I'm going to say who gets it? The team that takes the quarterback. Okay? The team that takes the quarterback. I will explain. I will explain by rewinding to the 2020 NFL draft first round, first pick, Bengals, Joe Burrow. Good pick. I like that pick. Second pick, Chase Young. Third pick, Detroit. A couple quarterbacks on the board. No. We got Matthew Stafford. Jeff Okuda, a cornerback who's hurt right now. We're going to take a cornerback. We're going to get our shutdown corner. The Giants were next. We need a tackle, left tackle. Andrew Thomas is our guy.
Because we got Danny Dimes throwing dimes.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Because then that allows pick 5 to come up. And the Dolphins say Tua, which I actually, you know what? It might work.
Take your shot.
And then at 6, the Chargers are there. And they're like, oh, my goodness, look who slipped down the board to us. There's some questions about him. But we're going to be the team that is going to be in late October of 2021 praised on who gets it and who doesn't by Judd Zolgad, because we're going to take Justin Herbert, who right now is one of the best things going. And this goes back to, I will take this back. Phil's going to get very upset. I don't care. I will take this back to the 2005 draft when I believe the 19th pick came up. And Aaron Rodgers is sitting there. And Dante Culpepper has almost no guaranteed cash left. And you say to yourself, but we don't need a quarterback. Detroit said the same thing. We got Matthew Stafford. We're set for life. You don't take the quarterback. Take
this is me
the
resisting
chance.
The urge to
take
fight
the,
back on that
take
terrible take.
The chance. Take the chance. Because you know what? Do you think that the Detroit Lions came here saying, yeah, but we got Jared Goff now. We're fine. Anyway, more now than ever, if you have the opportunity. And I'm not talking like a third round guy. I'm talking like if there is considered a top quarterback pick. So this is not Christian Ponder, but Justin Herbert was considered a wild card, a lottery ticket. But if he worked, you win, you can retire. And the Chargers did it. And the Detroit Lions, imagine if they had him. Now, I'm not saying that the development would be the exact same, but I am saying that they would have given themselves a chance. And a year after saying, we don't need a quarterback. Matthew Stafford is gone, and you've got Jared Goff and not Justin Herbert.
Are you tying this into the Vikings specifically, like for draft, or is it just more of a general?
No, it's a general take. I am big on if there is a quarterback who is considered like a top 10, and you're like, but we got to take our shutdown corner.
Yeah, it's like I don't even
take a quarterback and. Full disclosure, in 2005, that was tougher. Now I don't think it's tough.
Well, it wouldn't have been. At no point in the history of football would it have been a tough decision to not draft Aaron Rodgers if you're the Vikings sitting on 26-year-old second in the MVP voting Dante Culpepper coming off a playoff win.
All money
but
gone, though.
That's a discussion for.
Guaranteed money gone at them. But my point is now.
Hairs, though.
Now, because he's basically done potentially. But now the key is this. Take the quarterback.
Let me ask you this. All right. This is against my better judgment that I'm going to go down this path right now. This was the biggest argument in Mackie and Judd on air radio show history.
Loved it.
When Judd said the Vikings made a mistake not drafting Aaron Rodgers in the 2005
James.
Draft.
Now, I didn't say 7. I said I believe it was 19 where they took Erasmus James, to be clear.
Mm-hmm.
19.
What was your thought before that? Like, as Rodgers is slipping. Because were you covering the Vikings then or the Packers?
No, I was covering that draft for the Star Tribune. I was in Green Bay, so I was covering the Packers.
With full honesty, were you sitting there in that moment? Dante Culpepper in his prime, in his mid-20s, coming off. He's like second in MVP voting. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL.
Yep.
And the Vikings won a playoff game the year before in Green Bay, so they got some really good things going offensively.
Yep.
Were you sitting there in that moment thinking to yourself, holy crap, the Vikings should draft Aaron Rodgers?
I wasn't even
thinking. Was it a first guess from Judd Zolgad?
I was not thinking about them because I was covering the Packer draft, but what I was thinking is going into that day, it was Alex Smith or Rodgers' first pick. Like,
yes.
Like we didn't know. And I kept thinking, when is somebody going to go up and stop his fall? So that's what that was. What I couldn't believe was he kept falling and falling and falling. And nobody, and now that there would definitely be a team that would trade up. But to see him fall that far, so I was not, full disclosure, thinking about that through the prism of the Vikings. I was through the prism of, this guy was like a coin flip top overall quarterback, and everyone's just allowing him to fall. And this will always go back to one thing, Moss. Like, how can no one stop that fall? Like, at some point in time, Randy Moss had problems. I get that, okay? But he was considered, I think, by many, a top 10 talent, and there was concerns.
Wide receivers were, like, that would never happen today, or Aaron Rodgers.
No, I agree.
Wide receivers were much more marginalized in the 90s.
But what I'm saying, but what I'm saying is, so Moss falls here, comes here, is spectacular in some ways, changes the game. My thought process about the draft was forever changed of, okay, if you know a player is that good, how do you just allow him to fall? And if you have a coin flip first overall quarterback, and now he's in the 20s, what's going on here?
And although I will always disagree with your take on the Vikings and Aaron Rodgers, I also will give the Vikings more leeway for whiffing on Christian Ponder because of all you got to take your shots. You got to take your shots on quarterbacks. And the Vikings, you know, they got Kirk, and they're comfortable with Kirk right now. But they were, like, they're so comfortable with Kirk, and they were so risk-averse that they would rather, oh, God, we like Fields a lot, but, I mean, we don't want to give up a third-round pick to move up for him. Like, you know, they're haggling over what the cost is. And so they hedge. Well, I guess we'll go Kellen Mond instead in the third round. And then, like, nobody will judge us if he doesn't pan out because he's a third-round quarterback, and they rarely pan out.
Right.
You know, it's like – it's so I'm okay with the Ponder draft because they took a shot, as big of a failure as it was.
Right. But, I mean, so. Chase Young, great player, right? I'd prefer the quarterback. Okuda, Detroit could have Justin Herbert. Andrew Thomas, I'm sure he's fantastic. And you've got – Danny Dimes, and I understand that, but I think the thought process about these guys has to change. Like, I think we have to be so afraid of oh, man, because once you land one, you're set. Man, you're set.
Yep. So, all right. Federated Insurance, here to help you guys if you're business owners out there in the state of Minnesota. Federated's been a great partner for us on Mackie and Judd throughout the years, and they're all about risk management, protecting your employees, protecting your bottom line, your business in general. Find out about all the great resources Federated has and all the great people you can tap into and the knowledge and expertise at federatedinsurance.com. And remember, at Federated, it's our business to protect yours. Mackie and Judd, daily Minnesota sports entertainment. We'll get to random season recall in just a little bit, but would you guys mind if I forced some Timberwolves preseason overreactions on you right now?
No,
like,
no,
you're my only outlets.
Not
here. I can't do it at home, really. I don't want to inundate my wife with, like, my third preseason game.
Why not?
She doesn't care. Honey.
I tell Dawn about that.
You won't believe. Jaden McDaniels from the right corner three is lights out right now. It's crazy.
I explain sports to Dawn all the time, and I'm sure she appreciates it.
You mansplain sports to your wife.
I don't know. I don't mansplain. I get into the intricacies of, like, baseball moves. That's not mansplaining. That is helping someone understand the great national pastime.
Well, the Wolves last night, you know, they let the Clippers hang around for a few minutes there in the first quarter, you know. So they just, they were kind of feeling things out. And then they drop another 40-point second quarter. And they wind up with a 128-100 victory. Now, the Clippers, it's preseason, and the Clippers didn't play Paul George. But listen, the Wolves didn't play Josh Okogie, and so it basically cancels out. I mean, we got one starter here and another starter there. But I literally last night, I'm sitting there, I'm taking notes on my phone. I'm gleefully, giddily watching this ball movement offense. And, boys, I think the biggest thing I noticed was Anthony Edwards, Carl Anthony Towns, and D'Angelo Russell, who all played around 25 minutes, just how well they play together and how much they look to feed each other opportunities. You know, the situation in Philadelphia with Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, it's awkward, it's clunky, and, you know, now it's like an abomination. I mean, like, on the court when they were playing together, it's awkward, it's clunky, they're kind of in each other's way. And I just feel like Towns, Edwards, and Russell are great complementary pieces. I mean, there's times where, like, Russell will come down the court three times and facilitate something or maybe get his own shot. And then he'll realize, or Chris Finch will call a play set of some kind and says, okay, now it's time for Ant to – he's going to be the point person here on the right wing. And then Carl Anthony Towns will get his shots in the low block, and if he gets doubled, he kicks it out. And the way those guys are playing off each other, and all three of them, 13 shots for Edwards, 13 shots for Towns, 11 for Russell, like, that's how it should be. I think Towns and Edwards should take the most shots. Russell should take shots when he's hot but look to distribute. And then everyone else should sort of fall in line and be a role player. And so I know we're three preseason games in, but just playing off the last 10 games of last year too, those three guys look to be playing off each other very well in the 3-0 preseason start. That's my biggest observation.
Well, that's, yeah, imperative too. So do you think that D'Lo gets his role then?
Yes.
Because, I mean, that's incredibly important. That's incredibly key to this whole
thing. A lot of people were kind of worried that, like, all right, does D'Lo think he's the 1A here? And is he going to go rogue and shoot the ball 30 times and just sort of freeze out Anthony Edwards? And that was not the case. I mean, those guys were on the court at the same time. And D'Lo was looking to set up Edwards, and then he would just sort of, you know, fall out and stretch the court. 9 assists for D'Angelo Russell in 23 minutes last night. He also was active on the rebounding front too. Like, how active these guys are off the ball right now is something that really stands out. And it's early, and it's camp, and it's preseason, and I'm sure it's being drilled into their heads.
Right.
But they're very clearly taking more pride in off the ball movement, defensive movement, etc.
That's Finch too, right? Like, I'm
100%.
Like, I think the scheme is going to be good. I think the scheme probably works, I don't know.
It's working so far in the three preseason games.
And the thing too,
you all laughed. I told you they'd be undefeated in the preseason.
Oh, geez. Yeah, you did. And the thing too that I think is incredibly important is Ant is so easy to like, and like he's such a breath of fresh air that I think distributing to him and working the ball through him, I think that becomes very simple because it's not, you know, he's not an egomaniac type. He's not that type. And so it seems like this team might actually gel, which I don't know I can say for Wolves teams of the past that much. I don't know that there's been a gelling process that there could be here.
And that's a good segue into another observation is these guys look like they like playing with each other. Yeah. I mean, there's a joy that seems to have been missing for the better part of the Carl Anthony Towns era, just through different coaching changes and roster turnovers. And they look like they're rooting for each other. The bench is active when somebody comes up with a big play. It's a preseason game, and like the bench is up and cheering and waving towels. And, you know, that sounds so stupid if you're the Lakers right now or you know, pick an established franchise that went like the Warriors. But when you're trying to build this thing and you're trying to get everyone on the same page and rooting for each other and just creating those sort of positive vibes, like that's kind of where we're at with the Wolves. Just create some good positive vibes and get everyone on the same page. And observation number three, Jaden McDaniels, Declan's guy.
My dude.
Declan pinpointed this with his basketball whisperer acumen at the beginning of last season.
I did.
He is becoming the quintessential 3-and-D guy for this team, all right? He can guard almost any position on the floor. He's super active, and he has found a couple of spots in the corners, namely that right corner last night, where he can bomb threes at a high percentage. And so if he becomes just throughout – maybe he's got the upside to be more of like the second-best player on a team, but he's so young. If he can just be – the quintessential 3-and-D guy. You're going to take five threes a game, make two or three of them. You're going to play lockdown defense. You're going to get some steals. You're going to grab some rebounds. You're going to play 25 minutes a game. Like, that would be an amazing piece to plug in for this roster.
He also let me get my Jaden McDaniels taken. I think he also put on like 25 pounds of muscle too. Like the dude had put on a ton of weight because he was lanky. He came into last year at like 185 pounds soaking wet. So he actually put on some muscle and he's bigger. And I mean, they don't really have big, thicker guys. Like, I mean, Naz Reid's an absolute horse, but outside of that, it's a pretty small ball team. Like they need guys like McDaniels who are long and can play defense because McDaniels and Beverly and basically Naz Reid are going to be the only guys that can probably be shut down defenders.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like size wise, they're not going to be a muscle you up team. Like ultimately, they're going to have to score like they did last night. They're going to have to score 120 plus points on a regular basis to win a lot of these games. But Patrick Beverly adds perimeter defense, and he didn't play last night because he's old and they just don't need to play him in all the preseason games. If Jaden McDaniels and Patrick Beverly can set sort of the base defensively, like these are our two best defensive players.
Yep.
And then if Edwards and Towns can take a step forward even, you're looking at a team that's going to be able to at least be formidable defensively. They're not going to be locked down 2004 Pistons, but like they'll at least be formidable defensively if these guys are – if they keep doing what they're doing here.
Dare I say that with your point, Phil, you put the Simmons idea – from a Wolves perspective, on the back burner to see what you've got here from a chemistry and team standpoint.
Yeah,
because you're going down a path that sounds like it's a pretty good path. I don't know if you shake things up to a team where you've got some confidence that what you have currently on your roster actually might work for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, and they play so many home games out of the gate too to start the season. It's like seven home games in their first eight or something.
Yep.
So I guess to your point, okay, would I still like Ben Simmons on this team? Yes. Have I now that I've watched three preseason games, have I moved into the curious about this current roster stage? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you can see how this looks in the first month. I don't know what's going to happen with, like, Simmons reported yesterday, right? Didn't he show up and get?
Yeah, apparently.
He showed up, and I guess they didn't expect him, it turned out.
All right.
So, like, he just walked in, and they're like, Ben, nice to see ya.
Super awkward. So,
it's
I don't know.
It's a really weird story.
Is he going to play games?
I think he still gets dealt. Like... But if the Wolves make a trade for him, there's no question Dex's guy is gone. Like, he would have to be involved.
Yeah.
And if what you're saying is accurate and he is maturing more, I don't know that that's a great idea.
Yeah, I also don't want to. I don't want to go too crazy and that Ben Simmons is literally one of the five best defensive players in the world and is also one of the great inside offensive players. Like people rip on him because he can't shoot or doesn't shoot, but like he also converts at like a 55%. Most of his shots are within about 8 feet and he's really good within that range. So it's like
out there.
People say he doesn't do anything offensively. No, he's actually really good in transition and inside.
He might be
like,
a super
he's
weird
a much
dude,
better
though.
Player than Jaden McDaniels, but he makes a lot more money too.
And he might be super weird.
Yeah, like, there's a whole vetting thing that needs to be done. Like, is his personality and his glass ceiling because Philadelphia just held him down and schematically he needs a different coach and system? I think there's some of that. But I'm curious just to see this group, which runs about 9 or 10 solid players deep. You know, they're bringing Taurean Prince for 20 minutes. Jared Vanderbilt's a really good player for 20 minutes.
Yep.
Naz Reid for 20 minutes. You know, like
–
Balmaro, over to Noel, back to McKinley Wright. So there's a lot to see here in the first month. If they could just sort of put the Ben Simmons thing on the back burner for like a month, I would be curious.
Your thoughts on the potential, because I think we are going to see it more now that Gerson's gone, on the Cat Naz being on the court at the same time?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think if something allows Kat to be a little bit more free to if he can be more free to explore the perimeter, I am both offensively and defensively.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested in that. I don't know. Right now, I think their starting lineup is going to be Kat at the 5 and Jaden McDaniels at the 4 with some combination of like Edwards, Russell, maybe Okogie. Like they've had Okogie in the starting lineup. Last night he was hurt. I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is I don't know what they're going to do with their starting lineup and combos. And some of it's less about starting lineups and more about like, okay, how does
right
if Naz Reid comes in, is he replacing Cat? Is he coming in to make the lineup bigger? The fact that Naz Reid can also shoot threes and stretch the floor offensively is a game changer.
Yep.
That guy was undrafted.
Yeah, that's a great find.
That guy was freaking undrafted, and he's out here one of the sneakier bench players in the league. Like last night, too, I'm just looking at box scores now, but like, because I got to be honest, I ducked out after the third quarter when the game was out of reach, and that was Naz Reid territory.
Yeah, because the Wolves win big like that all the time. It just gets boring.
Sure. Yeah, it does.
But like, you can just tell sometimes by looking at a box score. Boy, this guy came in for 20 minutes, two steals, two blocks, two assists. You know, like he's just active, and you watch that too. The eye test verifies it. And I'd have to go check like plus minuses and lineup combos from the last couple of years, but. Again, like half the season last year was Ryan Saunders. So almost anything you thought you saw last year needs to be thrown out because Chris Finch is now installing a bunch of new things that they didn't even use last year, both offensively and defensively. And that's exciting, too.
Friend of the show also, Dane Moore, said last night that Naz Reid is definitely the most talented power forward the Wolves can put next to Cat. And to be clear, I both mean that as a compliment to Naz and a rip on how this roster was put together with no player who was over 240 pounds. And over 6'10".
Yeah. Yeah, they're small. It's a small team. But they also have, on paper, about seven guys that can shoot threes now. Excuse me.
Don't get choked up about this. You know.
I know. It's very.
We haven't started yet. We haven't really kicked off.
The Timberwolves run to the top of the Western Conference starts now, baby. And
don't
I'm
get
emotional.
All choked up, Dan Campbell. It seemed impossible when the year started.
So those are my
that's good
super overreactions to the first Love three it. Wolves preseason games here, presented in part by our friends at PXG. This is not an overreaction. PXG makes outstanding golf clubs and apparel. I actually went to go hit some balls yesterday, a little fall golf myself. And if you're into fall golf over the next 4 to 6 weeks, golf season is still thriving. PXG Minneapolis is a golfer's paradise inside Southdale Center. You can find out more at pxg.com/Minneapolis.
Tee time for Sunday before the Vikes game. So I'm going to try to get 18 in before. I might. We'll see how quickly I can play.
What time you?
8:50. So I'm going to be pushing it. If there's no one in front of me, I'll be very, very close. I'm right down the road. I'm right down the road. So I might bail if by 11:40, if we're on 13 or 14, I'll say goodbye. But yeah,
just peace out.
Right. Just go by.
Get the fall golf rate too.
I love it. I can't wait. Yeah. It's gonna be cold too. It's like a high like 45, I think, on Sunday. So it's fall golf. It's here, baby. I'm ready to rock.
I love fall.
Inject it. All right. Every single Tuesday, Declan quizzes us. It's called Random Season Recall. He brings up a random Minnesota sports season from the past, puts our memories to the test.
All right. We'll stick with the Timberwolves. We're gonna go with the 2014-2015. Minnesota Timberwolves. So a more recent edition of Random Season Recall.
Okay.
We've been doing that a little bit more lately, so I'll dabble into this one. As we always do.
Okay.
How many wins for those 2014-2015 Timberwolves? I will give you three on either side. I'll be generous today. Three on either side.
2014-2015?
Okay. So they were bad. They were very bad. Yeah. I believe, okay, Joe, this is just two friends talking here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Take a little sip.
Like allergy throat here. My
nice
allergies
promo,
are just,
though. Phil Mackey for Gatorade. And Gatorade Zero.
Hey, everybody. We should put like a your energy drink here. I think this was Andrew Wiggins' rookie season. And I think this was also Flip Saunders' lone season back on the bench.
Okay.
And I think they were really bad.
Yeah, you're right. No, because Flip, if I'm not mistaken, died in October 2016.
Okay. So I think they were really bad this season. Like, what do you want? You want it within what now, Dex?
Three.
Within three?
Within three.
Judd, I don't think they won 20 games this year. I think it was like a 19-win team.
I'd defer to you on this, yeah.
Just trying to think strategically. You know, if we say 19, then we get 16 through 22. Is there any way they would have won more than 22 in Andrew Wiggins' rookie year? It was such a disaster.
Well, hold on a second, though. Okay, hold on one second. Because I think you're probably right.
They got the number one pick, so they had one of the
the top pick.
Yeah,
but Flip passed away. I remember I want to say it was during I got the release during a Vikings Lions game in right before the 2000. I want to say it was 2016, and that's the year that Mitchell coached him then.
Yep.
So that would be 2016-17, right? Because it was at the start of that year.
Yeah. So
did Flip coach him for
Flip moved off the bench. I think what happened was Flip coached 14-15, and then Flip moved off the bench to the front office for 2015-16.
Oh, did he?
And then 16, and right before the season. Yeah.
Okay.
Didn't he die in like October of 16?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So okay. So, and I thought he had coached him the year. Before, yeah, but I mean, yes. Go there. I'm sure that the team was terrible, so I'm sure that you're right on the.
Let's go 19. 19 wins.
19 wins.
The wins.
Yeah.
Yes! Ooh.
16 wins. 16 wins.
Okay. Oh my!
And by the way, you guys were a year early on the unfortunate passing of Flip. So 2014-15 was the last year. Flip passed away in October of 2015.
Oh, it's 15, yes, okay.
Judd, it was on a Sunday of a Vikings game.
Okay, that's what I remembered. Okay.
Because he, in the offseason, drafted Cat and Tyus Jones.
That's right.
And
that's
had the
right.
big party at, I believe, 508 or the Loon.
And, yeah, because he went to 508 and, I think Tyus and his family was there. Yep, okay.
Okay, so you're saying 14-15, and he did coach 14-15, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
So he died. Okay. So it was quicker than we gave it credit for there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Okay. Okay.
Okay. Who led the team in scoring per game that year?
Okay. Wiggins would have been 15, 16, 20, probably closer to 20 points a game. I think Kevin Martin was on that team.
Oh, what a great shot. A little set shot.
Weird.
That little weird motion that Kevin Martin had.
Was on that team. I'm trying to think of who else. So, Kevin Martin, Pekovic.
Might be Kevin Martin. You might be right about that. Because he did score. I mean, he did score a lot.
Who else would have been on? This is... Kevin Love's gone by now. So, what? they made the trade. Because they made the trade for the number...
During the offseason. Yeah. Yep.
So, Love was gone.
That's right. They didn't get the pick.
So it's either – I think it's either Wiggins or Kevin Martin. I'm trying to think of who else.
Yeah, who else was on that club? So who was the
– Oh, my God.
So that club
KG,
had
– KG, dude. KG was on that club. Wasn't KG on the –
He brought him back.
Yes.
During the – and Ricky was the point guard, right?
Yeah.
So that's Ricky.
It wasn't him.
No. So, yeah, you might be right.
All right, Kevin. It might be Wiggins, honestly, but Kevin Martin.
Kevin Martin, official guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah! Kevin Martin, 20 points for game.
That's a pull.
Kevin, 20 points for
that's
game for
pull.
Kevin Martin.
That's a pull,
man.
That's nice.
That's right.
Nice.
Not bad at all. Actually, funny enough, and this is the next question. 10 players averaged at least 10 points per game for this Wolves team.
Okay.
Give me 6.
All right, well, Kevin Martin,
yep.
Andrew Wiggins,
1, 2,
Nikola Pekovic.
3, yep.
That's 3 of them. Ricky?
Yeah, Ricky.
4.
Now the question becomes, who else was on this team?
Yeah. Who's the other forward on this team?
Oh, did he keep Budinger, Phil?
Oh, my God.
Did Flip keep Chase Budinger for a season?
God, he had knee issues. You know, let's burn a guess. All right, we get 3. Chase Budinger.
He was on that team, but he didn't, and he played in 67 games, but he did not average more than 10.
Oh, so he played. Okay, I was even positive he stayed on the team.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God,
doppelganger.
I'm trying to think, we went to.
So we've got 4. So we got 4, Declan.
You got 4. I need 2 more of the 10.
All right. Was.
Trying to think of, like, there's got to be another veteran or something. Who's their backup point guard? Like, Luke Ridnour? Wasn't Luke Ridnour on one of these teams?
That sounds right.
Would he have averaged 10? Let's go Luke Ridnour.
Luke Ridnour is not on this team. Come on,
all right,
fellas.
So who else did...
Come on.
So who quit prodding us. So who else did Flip bring in from a veteran state? He had to bring in some.
Let's also
standby.
Think about some of the draft picks that were made. So it went, mm-hmm. let's go on our. So Rubio was 09. It took him a couple years to come over.
Mm-hmm.
Wes Johnson, Derek Williams.
Oh, that's right, Derek Williams. What a terrible pick.
But that would have been like...
I don't remember
2011.
Who was still...
I don't think he was still on the team.
I don't remember who was still around by that point. That's why I was trying to think, did Flip bring in any of his old standby veterans that he liked?
Well, who else did he draft
did
here?
Garnett?
Like, no. KG was like 5 or 6 points a game. He only played in like 5 games.
Now...
Who were they drafting like before Wiggins? I'm trying to think. Who were the draft picks like a year or two before Wiggins? God, this is such a transition era of Wolves basketball. What about Alexei Shved, Judd? Remember that guy?
Oh, yeah. I remember him.
I don't know if he was averaging 10 points a game, but...
I don't remember if he was still...
Change your face.
Be happy.
Yeah.
Anthony Tolliver probably averaged 10 points. He was probably on that team.
That unofficial guess.
But I'm kind of out of guesses here. Anthony Tolliver.
Okay.
Oh my God.
All right, dudes.
Wow.
You missed out on Shabazz Muhammad.
Oh, Shabazz.
Thad Young.
That was one of the. That, yeah. Thad Young. Oh my God.
Corey Brewer.
Okay, he came back. He scored mm-hmm. 50 in a game.
I mm-hmm. forgot he was even
was
back.
Was Mo Williams on this team, too?
Mo Williams. You missed Mo Williams. He averaged
12
points.
He dropped 50 in a game.
He was the veteran that mm-hmm. flipped.
That's
right.
I knew there was.
And you missed Zach LaVine. You missed Zach LaVine.
That's a bad miss. I'm not going to apologize for the rest.
Fact that Zach LaVine was on this team, mm-hmm. my God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't. He technically counts this, but I'm not counting it. Gary Neal played in 11 games and also averaged 11 points, but I'm not. 11 games, in my opinion, isn't qualified, but according to Basketball Reference, it does, but I'm not going to...
Gary Neal?
Okay.
Yeah, Gary Neal.
I don't remember Gary Neal at all.
I
could pass him on the street. I wouldn't recognize Gary Neal.
Couple more here. The Wolves ranked first in the NBA in this scoring statistic. Scoring statistic. First in the NBA.
Okay, they didn't shoot threes.
It went to been three-point attempts.
Flip hated threes. Short field goal attempts.
I'm trying to think of how obscure is this. They might have been a high percentage free throw shooting team that year.
Okay.
Ricky always made free throws. Yeah. Kmart was like a 90%+ free throw guy. Could they have been free throw percentage?
I like how you're thinking.
I don't think they got to the line very often, but let's go free throw percentage.
Free throw percentage.
Yep.
No, but sixth in free throw percentage and second in mates and third in attempts. They didn't get to the line a ton. They got to the line a ton, but percentage-wise, they didn't make a...
The other one I would say is they probably... I don't know. I was going to say two-point percentage, but Ricky was a bad converter at the rim.
Laptop died, but I remembered the questions off the top of my head.
Okay.
Andrew was really good, though, at the rim that year. Because that was his first year, and he actually drove to the basket a lot and converted a lot, I think.
All right, let's go two-point percentage. Two-point make percentage.
All right. Yes! It's two-point attempts. It's two-point attempts. Two-point attempts. They were actually like 22nd in percentage, but attempts they were first.
Oh, no, we're wrong. We're wrong.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Flip loved that.
Yeah.
Flip loved the two-point. He loved them. Mid-range shots.
Yeah. Two-point attempts. Okay, we probably should have sniffed that one out.
And he got very mad. He got very mad when pressed about three-pointers.
And
that was the one thing.
The Wolves ranked dead last in the NBA in this offensive statistic.
Three-point attempts.
Bingo. First in two-point attempts, dead last.
And I think what Flip was trying to do is take his system and just kind of stretch it out a little bit, but that's not too much. How it really works. Yeah.
Final one. Who was the highest paid player on the Wolves that season? Last one.
Was it Peck?
Well, Peck probably made. He made like
Peck
a prorated
max.
It was like a $14 million a year. Kevin Martin was probably in that range.
Yep.
I mean, Thad Young was highly paid. I think Thad Young was highly paid. Who are the other ones? So Levine went to Ben. Levine was a second-year guy.
Yeah.
Who are the other the scores that Declan was saying?
They were all.
Mo Williams, man. Mo Williams might have been the highest-paid player on that team.
Nice headband. I'm
trying to think. Let's go Peck.
Peck?
Let's go Peck.
Nikolai Pekovic. Yeah. Nikolai Pekovic.
Right, there we go.
There you go.
Because he got the contract.
Yep.
And Flip lowballed him slightly because he was
His agent said he's a max player. His agent told him that he's my client's a max player, and Flip said, totally agree. Prorated to the 50 games that he plays.
That's 100% right. Yeah.
That's amazing.
That was a great negotiating tactic.
Yep. All right, that is a wrap on Mackie and
Judd good.
Daily Minnesota Sports Entertainment. No, I think the Timberwolves in some of those years are just so they're always in transition, basically.
Not anymore, Phil. Not anymore.
Run with the pack. All right, we'll see you guys tomorrow. Write that down. We're going to admit that we were wrong tomorrow, so you're not going to want to miss it.